Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 12, Text number 39. I'll start writing with the verse because we're a little short on time now. Konu me titaren mayam. Vishaktas tvadrite puman tamstan visrijatim bhavan dustaram akritam bab, excuse me, dustaram akritatmabhi konu me titaren mayam. Visaktastvadrite puman tamstan vishvatim bhavan dustaram akritatmabhi konu me titaren mayam visaktastvadrite puman Hamstan Vishrajatim Bhavan Dustaram Akrita Mabhi. Please chant. Konu me titaren mayam Vishaktas tvadrite puman tamstan vishvajatim bhavan dustaram akritam bhavi. Ladies, please. Synonyms. Kaha, what? Nu, indeed. Me, my. Atitare, can surpass. Mayam, illusory energy. Vishakta, attached to material sense enjoyment. But, Rite, except for you, Puman, person, tan, such conditions, tan, unto the materially attached person. This Raja team, in surpassing Bhavan, reactions of material activities, Dustaram, very difficult to surmount, Akrita, Atmabi, by persons unable to control their senses. Translation. My dear Lord Shambhu, who within this material world but you can surpass my illusory energy? People are generally attached to sense enjoyment and conquered by its influence. Indeed, the influence of material nature is very difficult for them to surmount. Please repeat. My dear Lord Shambhu, who within this material world but you can surpass my illusory energy? People are generally attached to sense enjoyment and conquered by its influence. Indeed, the influence of material nature is very difficult for them to surmount. Purport. Of the three chief demigods, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshvara, all but Vishnu are under the influence of Maya. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, they are described as Mayi, which means under Maya's influence. But even though Lord Shiva's associates, Lord Shiva associates with Maya, he is not influenced. The living entities are affected by Maya. But although Lord Shiva apparently associates with Maya, he is not affected. In other words, all living entities within this material world, except for Lord Shiva, are swayed by Maya. Lord Shiva is therefore neither Vishnu Tattva nor Jiva Tattva. He is between the two. Omagina timiranda syaganjana shalakaya chakshur ummilitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. And I beg for the prayers of all the assembled Vaishnavas here and over the internet, so that I may say something useful and beneficial for all of us. Thank you. So here we have Lord Vishnu praising Lord Shiva as being the foremost of sense controllers. In other words, he has stated unequivocally that Lord Shiva, when it comes to the material world, there is nothing in it, there is no one in it, especially the most beautiful, most wondrous-looking woman cannot affect you, cannot disturb you, cannot create any change in you. In other words, you can look at her form, you can look at her face, her hair, her legs, and it will not affect you. And yet here we see Lord Vishnu has created a very interesting drama to show that Lord Shiva can be affected, but he cannot be affected by the internal energy. No, I said he cannot be affected by the internal. He can be affected by the You got it right. Yes. He cannot be affected by the external energy, but can be affected by the internal energy, which is the energy that was being manifested in this particular scenario. The extra, as it's mentioned in the verse here, this divine energy of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature is very difficult to overcome. It's very difficult to overcome, but those who surrender unto me can easily cross beyond it. And here we have Lord Shiva, who is totally surrendered to the Supreme Lord. If he were not surrendered totally, then he could not be unaffected by the external or material energy. No one can escape it, as it's mentioned here. No one escapes except those devotees who are so totally surrendered to the Supreme Lord that they receive the grace of God. They receive his mercy. What is this grace? What is this mercy? This mercy, this grace, is a strength. It's a power. It's the power to resist. It's the power to be unaffected. The power to disregard. It's the power that gives you freedom while being in the material world. Everyone is not free. Everyone is enslaved. The material energy is affecting everyone in one way or another. It affects us through the five senses, the tongue. You taste something very delicious, very tasty, like chocolate or some, you know, some ice cream or some you know, nice halwa or sweet rice. And, you know, you take one little lick and then you want another. And then you want another and another and another and another and another. That's the nature of material pleasure. Well, this is actually spiritual pleasure because the Lord has put his taste on it. He's tasted it. But we want to keep tasting the flavor. So we want to hear beautiful sounds, smell beautiful fragrances, have any type of pleasure of the senses we want to continue, we want to expand on. And that's because we came into this world for one particular purpose. The purpose is to enjoy. I shouldn't say one, actually there are three. To enjoy. We came from the eternal world as servants, no longer wanted to serve the Supreme Lord, and thus wanted to be served as a Lord. Wanting to be served as a Lord means that in the eternal world, the Lord is receiving all sorts of pleasures. Everyone is serving his ears and his eyes and his nose and his tongue and his skin in every which way. It is all done out of love. And in the material world, when we come here, we want to be served as a Lord. So being served as a Lord means acquiring or accumulating or aggrandizing as much pleasure as we possibly can. And we try to get as much because it makes us feel like a Lord. That's what we're here for, to feel like a Lord. We don't want to serve the Lord anymore. Also the mind. We want to use the mind to control others, to manipulate, to arrange things, to feel that we are in control. So, in sense enjoyment, proprietorship and controllership, and being the friend of all. One wants to feel that everyone is his friend, everyone likes him, everyone adores him, everyone looks up to him. Because in the spiritual world, everyone does look up to Krishna, adores Krishna, bows down to Krishna, glorifies Krishna. So this is the problem. The more we become stimulated by whether it's physical sense pleasure or mental pleasure or intellectual pleasure, the more we have of those and the more we are glorified for having them, the more we are applauded for having them, the more we are celebrated for having them, the more we become attached to them. Attachment is a sense or a feeling that it is indispensable for my happiness. I can't live without it. And yet, in truth, in reality, we can live without all these things. But due to the fact that we have this false ego means I'm attached to the body. I am this body. And through this body, or with this body, I will enjoy this world. I will control this world. I will own this world.
And I will make so many people will love me as a result of all my accomplishments. And this is most unfortunate because although in our heyday, in our youth, we may have some power, may have some strength, may have some glory. But as we get older and our hearing starts to go, we can't smell the fragrance of the flowers as well as we once did. Even the tastes are not as strong, so we have to put all kinds of spices in order to be able to taste the things that we before could taste very easily. And our memory starts to go. So many people today, they have dementia, they have Alzheimer's disease. They even forget their name. They forget where they live. They forget what their accomplishments were. So all this work for little moments of accomplishment, little moments of this type of physical, mental, and emotional and intellectual pleasure, only to be eventually squashed, eventually to be destroyed. So what is the purpose of it? So now we have here Lord Shiva, who, as it's mentioned, he's able to resist all kinds of material allurements. How is that possible? Generally, for human beings who have come into this world to enjoy, as I've just said and spoken and elaborated, that's not possible. The secret of Lord Shiva's ability to restrain, to resist, to have no interest in these things, his secret is that he is totally surrendered to the Supreme Lord Vishnu. He speaks and says and sounds and recites the name Ram continuously. There's not a moment where he's not doing that. That is his surrender. There's no difference between Lord Ramachandra, Lord Krishna, and their name. And so he repeats those names. And in so doing, he receives the mercy, he receives the blessing, he receives the strength. And therefore, he's unaffected, he's impervious to all the allurements of this material world. And that is because he lives in the internal energy. He lives in the spiritual energy. And when one is living in the spiritual energy, as Srila Prabhupada so wonderfully showed, they're unaffected by these things which are going on in the material world. Some of them may say, well, you know, Srila Prabhupada was elderly, so of course, why would he be affected by any young women? His being unaffected had nothing to do with the age. It had all to do with the fact that his mind was always on Krishna. And being always on Krishna, he was feeling the inner bliss, the inner joy, the inner fulfillment, the inner satisfaction that comes from having your mind centered on Krishna and receiving the reciprocation of Lord Krishna's love, which comes in the form of inner joy. As it is mentioned, a liberated person is not attracted to material sense enjoyment, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized soul enjoys unlimited happiness because he focuses, he centers his mind on the Supreme Lord. That's the secret. And there are so many ways to center our mind on the Supreme Lord. There is the chanting of the holy name. There's the hearing of the Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, worshipping the deity, living in a holy dham, and being fully appreciative that we have so many devotees who are glorifying God, honoring God, celebrating the Lord, with whom we can associate. Serving the Lord's lotus feet, those of us who have deities, wash the feet of the Lord. Worshipping the Lord, offering prayers to the Lord, practical service to Krishna. Some of us are cooking, some of us are cleaning, some of us are singing, some of us are teaching. All of this is practical service, and if it is done as loving service to the Lord, then we connect with the Lord, we associate with Krishna. And when we associate and connect with Krishna, that is when he is so pleased. When we connect with him out of love, not merely I just do the service, that's good. Anyone who does devotional service, not even thinking of Krishna, even that's good because, after all, it's service to God. But one who serves the Lord with an understanding of why he's serving, of course, and he knows to please Krishna, that's even better. But one who serves the Lord communicating with the Lord, begging for his mercy to be able to do the service better, to be able to do the service perfectly, so perfectly that Krishna will be pleased by the service. When we serve in that manner, then Krishna gives us, he says he is the ability in man. That means anything and everything we see throughout this world, which has come from someone's ability, that ability originates in, has its source in the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. So understanding this, the devotee who is performing some service, he is communicating, if he can. Sometimes you're in a circumstance and you cannot actually be thinking directly of Krishna. Sometimes we are, depending upon the service. For example, if you're doing a mathematical, abstract type of situation, it's very difficult to be thinking of, you're thinking of this leads to this, and this leads to this, and this leads to this, so there's not much room, unless you get stuck. And when you get stuck, and you have a question, and you can't solve the question, so there's an opening. My Lord, due to my dumbness, due to my stupidity, I can't solve this. I need your help. Can you give me a little help? A little bit? Anything? So this is good when you come to the Lord for guidance, for assistance. And he likes that because it shows that we are dependent upon him. He wants us to be dependent upon him rather than to be just dependent upon our own endeavors. Because the more we depend upon our own endeavors, and if he allows those endeavors to be successful, he allows those endeavors to be to be enabled, then the devotee may grow in pride. He may think, well, just see what I did. I did this, I did that, I did this. I accomplished so much. I achieved this. I have so many medals. I have so many cups. I have so many banners. I have so many awards. So I must be wonderful. I must be great. This kind of pride is not wanted from a devotee. Actually, the devotee tries to achieve the very opposite. He tries to become humble. But when a person is proud, what happens is that at some point in time, he may be eclipsed by somebody who's better than him or her in some particular endeavor. And so the person then feels envious and wishes that that person would somehow get out of here, die. I don't want to look at him because you've eclipsed me. You've made me feel small, insignificant, worthless, good for nothing. I don't want to feel like that. I've come here to be a lord, to be big, strong and tall and worshipped and honored. And here you are, taking away my thunder. You're stealing it. How dare you? Sometimes people even kill in order to be top dog, number one. I remember years ago, some of you may remember in the Olympics, there was in the ice skating arena. What happened was that there was this girl who was a very excellent ice skater, and there was another one who was maybe not exactly as good, but she and her husband and a few other of their friends, they wanted to enable the one who is not as good to win the Olympics. So they attempted to break her legs. And they did injure her. There's no question about that. And then the whole thing came out, that somebody would attempt to break somebody's legs so that they couldn't skate as well as they normally could and lose the championship. People will do those kind of things. People will shoot people. It's just out of envy. Excuse me. So as devotees, our business is not to be top, not to be great, but to utilize whatever Krishna has given us in loving service, and to do it as well as we can, and to take shelter of the Supreme Lord, to do it well so that we can offer something beautiful, something great, something lovable, something adorable, something that Krishna will cherish, because so much love and so much interest and so much thoughtfulness has gone into the gift. Whatever you offer me in love and devotion, a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, Krishna says, I will accept it. He says he will accept it. But he says, whatever you offer me with love and devotion, not just give it. Sometimes people just do that. Sometimes I see people going around with the candle, the light, or the flower, and just put under your nose like it practically knocks you back, like that. Wait a minute. He's supposed to give it to me to smell, not to knock me over. So You know, and then there are other nice devotees I see. They take the flower and they're holding it very delicately, very gently, because they know that Krishna's vibration is in this. And they put it right near your nose. They don't shove it into your nose, but they put it under your nose. And you then you go, good, good, thank you. And so that's he's doing it thoughtfully. He's doing it carefully, not as just some mechanical activity. Not some robotic thing. I just do it because I hear it's good to do. No, everything should be done with thought and feeling and care. And if you do everything with care and feeling and thought as an offering to Krishna, then he gives us that blessing which enables us, as I've been talking in the early part, to be unaffected, undisturbed by this material energy. The important thing is that when or if any one of us reach that stage, we actually see that we're not affected, we're not disturbed. Men is not disturbed by beautiful women, or woman is not affected by looking at a very handsome man, and she just sees him just as a body, but the real person is the soul, and because she's constantly, or he's constantly associating with Krishna, then the association is towards the soul and the wonderful qualities of the soul that exist in it. So, therefore, the important point is that the association is with the soul, and it is with the Supreme Lord. So when a person reaches this wonderful stage where he's unaffected or undisturbed, unruffled by anything sensual or sensuous, this is a great state, and there's a very big temptation here. The temptation is that I am so advanced. This is how one is thinking. I'm so advanced. I'm so strong. I'm so capable. I'm so invulnerable. I can't be affected by anyone. As soon as one begins to think in that way, he or she is in big time trouble. As soon as we think that we are, we can't be affected, we can't be disturbed, we begin to think that, yes, I'm superior, I'm higher, I'm better, I'm greater than all the others here. It may not come out in such a gross thought the way I'm expressing it. It comes out much more subtly. Such as, these people, you know, they're still struggling, you know, with their senses, but at least Krishna has gotten me out of that. That in itself is actually a devotee who has overcome the allure or the temptation of the material energy. His position is, and Srila Prabhupada mentioned this many times, his position is, no, I can fall at any moment. Not I have this control, I have no control. The only control I have is what Krishna is giving me. Otherwise I would have no control. Look at my past. He didn't give me anything, I had nothing. And I was just like an animal. But now he has given me some of his Shakti, some of his power, some of his bala, to restrain my senses, to be unaffected. So this is all due to the mercy of Krishna. So when a devotee actually takes the position that, no, I can be affected, I can be disturbed, I can be shaken, I can be allured, I can be brought into, I can be stimulated by lust very easily. And therefore, my dear Lord, I appeal to you, I beg you, I cry out to you to give me that strength, so that I can be resistant to that. Resistant so that I can continue to develop my love to you. Instead of trying to develop my love for sensual things, for material things, which will only bring me misery, will bring me distress and uncertainty and doubt and confusion. That's all that will bring me. I know I've had all that experience. So I'm praying to you. When we have this mentality, the Lord comes very quickly. He sees our helplessness. And due to this sense and feeling of helplessness, he wants to do everything he can for his devotee to reinforce the strength that he has given him or her. To be able to keep moving upward, upward, without obstacle, without difficulty, without tribulation or trial. And if there is a need for trial and tribulation and difficulty, he will give that too. But it will be under his control, not merely as something happening out of karma. Just the workings of the law. It will happen according to what Krishna sees and thinks we need. And if we pursue, if we fight on, if we continue and struggle and persevere, we will overcome those things because Krishna will give us the wherewithal. He will give us the strength. He will give us the knowledge to overcome this. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give them the understanding by which they may come to me. To show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So he gives us that knowledge. We get the knowledge from within. We get the knowledge from other devotees who have been through, who have experienced those things. We get the knowledge from these glorious, wonderful books. All these help us to move forward, to move upward. So Lord Shiva here is, this is to show us this apparent fall down. I say apparent because it's not a real fall down. As it's mentioned, he cannot be allured and he cannot be tempted by the material energy. But he can be persuaded, he can be stimulated by the internal energy, which is what he worships. And it's mentioned in one of the purports a few back that the spiritual energy or internal energy was acting as the material energy does. And what does that mean? Well, look what happened. The Lord wanted to show that Lord Shiva could be stimulated and could be allured, but only, of course, through his internal energy, but that he could be stimulated. And so what happened was that the scenario was a little bit different than what we saw the demigods and the demons and Mohini Murti carrying the vase of nectar. She was very nicely dressed in her sari, and she looked very, very beautiful. Here we have a little different situation. We have the girl, she's bouncing a ball, you know, like this, and her body is shaking and trembling while she's bouncing this ball, and she's glancing at Lord Shiva with a slight smile, and he's thinking, oh, she likes me. Because whenever a pretty girl glances at a male, generally the male, first thing is, oh, she likes me. She sees something in me that nobody else probably has. This is the ego. It draws all kinds of fantasies that really is just that, nothing but fantasies. So the same thing with women. They start thinking, the guy smiled at me. Yeah, he must like me. He wants to be with me. So anyway, the important point of this is that the next thing is that she was not. Her sari was not tightly tied, if you notice, if you read. It was loosely tied. So that when the ball got away, it started rolling away, what did she do? She went running after the ball. And as she ran after the ball, the sari fell off. And she was totally nude. And then Lord Shiva was looking at that, and then he started actually studying her body parts. This is the last thing that anyone who wants to maintain celibacy should ever want to do. By studying or glancing at or focusing on those things, it will arouse past memories. And those memories, when they become fully blown in one's mind, they begin to arouse certain hormones, certain juices inside the body, and then one feels so tempted that it cannot, at that point, resist. This is what happens. Sometimes we have men and women, they're in their service, and a woman particular features a particular devotee, or the devotee features a particular woman, and unconsciously, he wants to know her, he wants to meet her, and unconsciously, he actually wants to be close and intimate with her. He doesn't know that on a conscious level, and will not even admit that on a conscious level. And so he creates a situation in which they start talking together. Now, in devotional service, you can't help. You work, Prabhupada said, men are working with women are working with men, and sometimes a man has a question or a woman has a question, and it's just completely licit, there's no problem. And one answers the question, and that's it. But when playful talk begins, or frolicsome talk begins, a talk which is above and beyond the duty at hand. In other words, it becomes a form of sense gratification, such as Chota Haridas. This is why Lord Chaitanya rejected him. He was a sannyasi. And Lord Chaitanya, he knew through his own telepathic powers that when he begged rice, when Chota Haridas, he begged rice from, I think, from Malini, who was a very advanced soul, he started some extracurricular talk, unnecessary talk, frivolous talk, playful talk, frolicsome talk, which is not what a sannyasi should be doing. So Lord Chaitanya saw this and he wanted to set him up as an example that this should not be done. Because Malini would then, she would tell others and then it would get around. And then here he was, Chota Haridas, still with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he was allowing this to happen. So Lord Chaitanya would not allow that to happen. He would make an example of Chota Haridas and he told him, I don't want you coming in my company ever anymore. Now he was actually a great devotee, but he had this fault. And remember, the members of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's party, there was a very high bar, a high level of spirituality. They were not subjected to the kind of things we are, the advertisements and the TV and the beautiful girls leaning against the Ford Mustang, telling you'll have women like me if you just buy a Mustang. I mean, all this kind of nonsense that goes on, under the name of advertising. So so that was that. But the interesting thing is, Chota Haridas never gave up Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What he did is after 1 year had passed, Lord Chaitanya would not allow him to come into his group amongst the devotees. So he went to, was it Tribeni? I think it was Tribeni, yeah. And he drowned himself. And after he drowned, then he came back and he was in his spiritual form, and he continued to sing beautiful songs wherever Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was. Lord Chaitanya was pleased because he was willing to take responsibility for what he did. He acknowledged what he did, and he recognized that what he did was wrong and should be punished, so he punished himself. And that is actually in the Vedas. Of course, that's a very high standard, and generally people of today are not necessarily expected to just drown themselves. In fact, before anyone is even thinking of that, you should go to the spiritual master and talk it over. It's much better because temptation comes very strong today because of the enormous amount of exposure to it and the habits that we've acquired, the temptations that we've developed, the tendencies that we have developed. So it's much harder. And therefore, because it's harder in this part of the world, you get a lot more credit too. Just for being able to resist. Because if you've been taught from a child how to resist temptation, well, then it's much easier. Especially if you come from a real, true devotee Brahmin family. So the important part here is that Lord Shiva was affected by actually the internal energy of Lord Vishnu. That was the deciding factor. Otherwise, no one could stimulate him. And the internal energy, as I said, was, if you will, imposturing itself as the external energy does, and therefore he was able to be affected. The most important thing is Lord Vishnu wanted it to happen. And no one can resist. It is impossible to resist any desire that the Lord has for one because he is omnipotent. He's omniscient and he's all-powerful. How can we deal with all-powerfulness? We can't. So what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, one who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and comes to me. He says, if you do this, then what will happen is that you won't have to worry about this. I will take care of you. I will make sure that these things don't affect you. But surrender. And surrender means accept whatever is favorable for discharging devotional service. Reject whatever is unfavorable for discharging devotional service. Believe firmly that the Lord will always protect his devotee. Feel dependent upon the Lord, upon his mercy. This is a most important quality, depending upon Krishna. As adults, we don't want to depend. I'm an adult. I'm capable. I'm able to do it myself. Why should I depend? But we need to counteract that tendency. No, I can fall at any moment. Any second that could happen. It can happen in so many different ways, not just lured by the opposite sex, but you can become greedy for money. You can become greedy for degrees in education. A person has one PhD, then he wants another one and another one, wants to be known as being very erudite, very professorial, very glorious as a learned person. These are all material desires. And one leads to another, and another leads to another. That's why it's so important to be Krishna conscious while doing anything and everything that we must do, whether outside or inside, here. If we depend upon the Lord, so I was saying, depending upon the Lord, I didn't finish, having no separate interest besides the interest of Krishna, this means that whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, whatever austerities you perform, do this as an offering unto me, Krishna says, and if you do it as an offering to me, you'll be freed from the bondage of work and its inauspicious results. And if you're freed from those, then the path is clear, the path is clean, the path is such that you can continue developing in love for Krishna with a minimum of obstacles. So wherever we are, whatever we're doing, we give our everything to Krishna. We try our best to remember Krishna. And please try to, everyone in his own way should try to remember Krishna. I keep a tattoo of the letter K on my wrist. That's just my way of doing it. You know, I have the word time on my watch. So Krishna says, time I am. So, you know, I'm trying to arm myself with ways of remembering Krishna because I always forget him. That's my tendency. That's all of our tendency. But we need to fight against that. We need to beg from Krishna, I always forget you because I love me more than you. Help me, please, to love you more than me. Help me to get rid of this self-love and let my love be God love, Krishna love, Ram love, love of your service. Let me concern myself with pleasing your senses and not my senses, your mind and not my mind, your intelligence and not mine. Everything for Krishna, nothing for me. And when we have this attitude of total surrender, Krishna makes sure you have everything that you need. In fact, one who gives up everything has everything. One who wants to give up nothing has nothing. And I'll end on that note. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Hare Krishna. Thank you so much. Are there any questions or comments that any of you would like to make at this time? No? No questions? No comments? No challenges? No corrections? No? All right. Have a good meal. Have a good breakfast. Hare Krishna.